There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 55. Going to talk some news, play our weekly game as usual, talk some K and barrel percentage risers and fallers from the hitting position, and much, much more as we take rabbit hole trips down the fantasy football world. We are in May. It is May 4th. I'm not going to make a Star Wars joke. It's May 4th. So you got all that going for you. But you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're good. We're busy. This is my third podcast of the week. I mean, it's no Bubba. I mean, it's about a quarter of the typical Bubba workload. But
this is my first three for the day.
For me, it's been I mean, that's like your afternoon. But yeah. I'm doing good. Busy, but good. Not avoiding every starting pitcher blow up. I was pretty in the clear this week until today when Kevin Gausman got destroyed by Boston. That was rough. So it wasn't quite like a Jack Flaherty, Braxton Garrett, but it was bad.
It was like, I put the tweet out there. I was like, even Kevin Gausman isn't blow up proof this year. That's how it's like, it's going to come for everybody at least a couple times. Come to expect it. And it's going to come.
And Gausman, funny. I actually looked at his game log. I think today was 7 runs, gave up 7 runs a few starts ago. And then I think he's got 4 or 5 scoreless. So, yeah. I don't know, emotional regulation when he's on the mound.
Yep. Just, it's one of those things. If you're in a roto league, just play your dude every week and hopefully it balances out by the season's end. Like that's what just take the ups and the downs. Cause I don't think things are going to change anytime soon with this setup we have in baseball right now.
It is bad. Do you, when a pitcher gets blown up and he's not on your team, are you like happy?
Well, of course you're happy, but at the same time, I'm not out there tweeting about it like certain guys just because like I know for a fact it's coming my way. Like I'm not a big Gausman guy, but I have a couple shared. Like it's going to happen to everybody right now. It's nuts. I tweeted out the one we'll talk about, Fought and Stone. I did my joke because I was a big Tanner Bibee winner this past week.
I saw that. Like, yeah.
And that was, and literally, if people like, of course, Twitter doesn't look at the entire package. I put right underneath it another tweet. I'm expecting this to be used on Freezing Cold Takes. Like, I'm doing it. That was my sarcasm font, people. Like, that's what that got people pissy real quick. I'm like, guys, calm down. It's going to be okay. But
it is happening everywhere. That's kind of what you're saying. It's like, don't get too down.
No, embrace it. I guess the best thing I can say, and is it the right answer? Who knows? Look into maybe why it happened. If there's nothing like glaring, we keep going. But there's certain guys like Flaherty got shelled, and he's kind of been a freaking on the edge most of the season. Like you thought maybe a couple starts he'd make it one way, and then he'd bounce, go the wrong way. And so he's probably on the wrong direction. But then there's other guys like Gossman's like, you're going to throw him his next start. You're not worried about this. You're going to roll. But there are a few, like Lizardo, I'm curious about right now because that's kind of backfired. There's a bunch of guys that's probably a whole other show for another day, but it's just a lot of deep diving needs to take place pretty soon because again, we are in May, we're a month into the season, and you can't really cut a lot of these guys because the replacement level is even worse on the waiver wire.
Oh yeah,
but guys we'll talk about is like there's these prospects coming up, and some of these guys might be worth a drop for a prospect. Like I know in the Game of the Edge Discord, someone asked, would you drop Jack Flaherty for one of the Guardians pitchers? And we're like, yeah, in a 12 team or less, probably. Yeah, 100%. That's a question you probably don't ask 2 weeks ago. And it just, so it's time to start reevaluating the situation, basically, is what the way I'm looking at it.
It's funny, while all these blowups are happening at the same time, every week is a new starting pitcher prospect or batch of starting pitcher prospects. And I mean, that is why they're going for so much money, is rotations are just, if you don't have guys that are hurt, they're getting blown up and you need to do something about it. I know in my main event, like I have Brandon Woodruff and I have Lance Lynn as my number one and number three. Like I need to make stuff happen. So I don't know. It's a wild landscape while ERAs are up everywhere. And at the same time, this like weekly parade of, you know, this week's pitcher prospect. Having that happen at the same time has been pretty interesting to see. I don't really see that stopping anytime soon, at least definitely this week, and I'm pretty certain next week as well.
Yeah, I don't see it stopping anytime soon, like you mentioned, because there's even more names we're still waiting for. Like, it's not happening right now. I'm just throwing this into existence, hopefully, with Jack Flaherty leaving the game early. I don't know if it's because of his burned ego or he's actually hurt, but that means we might get Matt Liberatore sooner than we thought. Like, so now next week we might have another guy already coming up. We're still waiting, maybe Forrest Whitley, based on the Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy stuff. They haven't made anything official because they brought up a reliever when Garcia went on there, because they don't need another starter, so why not bring a reliever up? Makes, that's just logistical sense, people. They're screaming like, where's Whitley? It's like, they don't need him right now. This makes sense from a baseball standpoint. So there might be a few more coming.
That was another low point of my fantasy week. I have Luis Garcia on a few teams. I just checked my phone. First inning, gave up one hit. I'm like, whatever. Yep. I look and see who's pitching. It's like Brandon Belock. I'm like, oh no, not good.
Not good at all. I had him in DFS that day because pitching sucked. And I was like, well, I can put DraftKings away for the day. Yeah,
there goes that drama.
Well, you know what's crazy is people really don't care, but I literally missed men cashing by 2 points with Luis Garcia in my starting rotation. I was like, of course. Lovely. Perfect.
By the way, congrats on, again, probably no one cares, but Tout Wars, you punched your golden ticket, which for those that don't know, Tout Wars does I love the actual concept since you brought up DFS. It's like, I'm not a huge DFS player. I actually can't play it in Oregon, which is in 2023, kind of bizarre. But Tout Wars does it where it's like a league. And so I think it's every 4 weeks, the top three guys and gals get golden tickets. And then there's a whole tournament at the end of the year. So it's DFS, but there's a season long component to it. It's a lot of fun.
It's always usually one of the biggest slates. Tuesday is usually a full slate for the most part. So yep. Works out pretty well because we did Fridays for a bit, but people have lives and they forget to do it on Friday. So
yeah, Tuesdays is the sweet spot. I think, Todd Zola who sets it up and runs it. So it doesn't take that much of your time. You know, it's Tuesday. It's usually, like you said, a full slate that night. So it's, I don't know. I think that's the way to do it. It's fun.
Well, I was trying to load Fangraphs, but mine is not loading at all. My other websites are working just fine, just not Fangraphs.
Got your internet fixed, man.
Yeah, no, it is. That's why I was curious. I opened up like 4 more tabs. They're all working. This has happened to me almost – now it's open again. It has happened to me almost every other night with Fangraphs when I record my DFS show right now. There's something about this time of the night where it just does not want to work.
I'm in the same boat.
That's what I'm saying. It's a thing on Fangraphs right now. But
– So let's see how professional we can be. On a podcast, well, I was without Fangraphs. Let's do this.
You were talking about, like, well, I'm going to jump around on this new section here just because you're talking about the pitchers that have been coming up and doing their thing. So let's talk about those guys first. And last week it was Logan Allen and it was Bybee, and some were speculating on Gavin Stone or Fott when they were available and whatnot. Well, now Fott, Stone, and Bryce Miller made their debuts this week. Stone and Fott, we had a good idea of. Bryce Miller shocked a lot of people, coming straight from AA. Didn't really, like, he thought there might be a chance later. I had James Anderson on a week ago and he didn't think he was even that close yet. Like, and James is in tune with what's going on. So the fact that Bryce got the call was kind of surprising, and Bryce was dominant. I was doing my Tuesday show while the game was going on, meeting the Millers on TV, and Mason Miller went 100 pitches, by the way, 7 innings. That was awesome. But Bryce was great. They both had no hitters going into the sixth. Bryce had 10 Ks. That is the most by a Mariners rookie in their debut period. He beat that by one. The last guy, I forget his name, but he had 9 in 1977. They showed the stat on TV. That's how I know these things. So that was impressive. The thing with Bryce Miller, because obviously I don't know how many innings he's pitched recently because I can't see that right now, but he's going to be a popular name because out of the three I mentioned, Miller, Stone, and Fott, Bryce threw the best, and he looked comfortable. One thing I'll mention before I just stop talking and give it to you here, watching him, you see a lot of these guys in their first start, like Stone and Fott, I'm not too worried about. They could have been amped up. There's a lot of things. Like, you're not as in love with them as you used to be. But there's, you still have hope that they're going to be good because of the pedigree. Bryce Miller was so relaxed on the mound. And I know it's the A's, and there's no one watching, so it's like you're pitching a bullpen anyways, so it's easy. But the dude was, like, jumping off the mound thinking it was a strike three. They didn't give it to him. He started laughing, comes back and throws 99, like, on the paint. Like, he was just locked in. He was comfortable. He has the 1970s mustache. It's the nice way I'll say it on this show. I don't know. I like it. I thought this might have been Joey Weimer's little brother, looking at him on the mound. There's similarities to me in the looks. But what's your thoughts on Bryce Miller? I think performance-wise, obviously, the best of the week. But longevity for the season, I think, is the question mark.
Funny. I think that's fine. I think longevity for the season, Bryce Miller will be fine. Of course, you got Mason
Miller on your team, so you're good.
Because, yeah, exactly. 133 innings, I believe, last year in Double A for Bryce Miller. So there's that, like, the workload he's built up. That's about where Bibee and Logan Allen were at last week. The other thing with Bryce Miller, like, there is zero chance, unless he pitches poorly and, you know, pitches himself out of a job, there's zero chance Seattle's has better options in the organization. I mean, like you said, with James, we talked about that. We talked about this last week, and we talked about, like, Chris Flexen. I mean, it's just, I think Bryce Miller's job is probably the safest, definitely safer than Gavin Stone, if we're comparing that. Brendan Fott's probably pretty safe as well. Bryce Miller, despite, and yes, you can make the joke like, oh, Double A, that's actually harder than the A's, whatever. He did look amazing. And like you said, the temperament on the mound, like, it looked good. You don't want to go overboard on your bidding just from one start. Like, I still, from a talent standpoint, I trust the scouts, the evaluators saying that, like, Brandon Fott is, I think Brandon Fott is, on a talent standpoint, better than Bryce Miller. And he would be my top, if he's available in leagues this weekend, would be my top guy. But Bryce Miller is not too far behind for those reasons. Like, the job is safe, the workload's built up, and he looked pretty electric against, yes, the A's.
Yeah, I was pretty excited about it. And yeah, now you mentioned that the Fangraphs working close to 130-ish innings. So kind of like the Bibee and Allen, Logan Allen situation, yep, which is great to see. Fought was like at 166. That's a
Fought built up. Yeah. And a lot of Fought is at Triple A. The other thing with Bryce Miller, I didn't mention this, like, Bryce Miller went straight from Double A. So Bryce Miller has no Triple A experience. He's not super young. I mean, he's 24. So, like, I don't know if the experience, like, if that's such a bad thing. But yeah, Fott's like already kind of a horse.
Yeah, he's ready to roll. Cause like Gavin Stone's about 120, 125 too. That's not horrible. We'll stick to this group before I go down a tangent somewhere else. Now that I see the innings with Miller, I actually am more on board with you on this one. For some reason, I was thinking, since he went to Double A, he probably got slow played last year, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now I'm much more like, okay, there's just something here. Because we've seen guys jumping from Double A's. To me, I think teams are looking at, you know, A, they should know better than anybody with Julio Rodriguez. Like, we can get draft picks for this. What a concept. But B, it's like all these pitchers, kids, older pitchers, whatever, they're all getting TJ now. Why waste it in the minor leagues? Like, if he's showing he can get it going, like, it's the old saying, why waste bullets in the minors? I think they're finally starting to take that to heart. It's like, hey, let's go. Like, especially like a team like the Mariners, D-backs are kind of contending. That's only a month they're contending. Dodgers, these teams are going for it. Why not bring up your best chances to win? Makes sense. That's common sense stuff to me, but we'll see. So the part that I'm curious about, because we've seen it week in and week out, like the Mason Miller's 300-plus bids. We saw Bibee going actually more like 250 to 3-ish, a little over 300, depending on where you were. Logan Allen's more like a 120 to 180 guy, give or take, a couple higher than that. Obviously, there's fewer people with big money. as this thing's already going on. It's only May, obviously. So it's the conversation we've had on this show and others have had is obviously the longer you wait, the cheaper guys will be because there's not enough money to be around. So I'm curious to see where these guys go this week. Because if we go off like how the depreciation, you'd imagine like Miller, and at least Miller for sure, still goes around 150 to 200, probably, I'd imagine. Fought close. Maybe he has a bump to like 220, 230. And then Stone's a tough one. So do you have anything to add on to that idea?
That sounds about right. I don't think these guys should go for Tanner Bibee prices. They all have kind of have some flaws. I think more like a Logan Allen type price. So maybe in 15 teamers, it's like 150 ish, 12 teamers. And I mean, in Brandon Fott's case, he's pretty much rostered in 15 teamers already, but in 12s, I think you're looking more like 100 ish. Yeah, I don't know. That's fair. And I don't know, me personally, like I've just had a really weird, so the last 2 weeks in my,
I have lucked out.
I've been
able to look at it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like,
yeah,
I lucked out in terms of like I won the bid. They've each started one time for me, so did I really luck out? But I was the lowest winner in the main event for Tanner Bibee and Mason Miller. At I got Tanner Bibee for 202, awesome. Mason Miller for like 82. So I'm kind of counting my blessings there. Again, that could go belly up, but who knows? I just even like Mason Miller. I don't know. I think these guys go for right around that cost. I think if I had to rank them, I think I'd go Fott first, Bryce Miller second, Gavin Stone third. Like Gavin Stone, weird. Like he almost, yeah, I don't know.
I'd rather have his teammate Bobby Miller, he'll be up in another couple weeks probably.
Well, that's the thing with LA. It's like there is risk of Gavin Stone not sticking in the rotation. And quite frankly, Bubba, like Gavin Stone hasn't been that good in AAA. This year.
Not like these other guys.
No. 27 strikeouts in 24 innings, which is fine, but 12 walks in 24 innings. Like that's maybe he's working on things and maybe, you know, whatever. They are LA knows that Gavin Stone's gonna come up, so they're just, I don't know, working on other pitches, that sort of thing. That's on the table. But and honestly, I watched the start. Who knows, just one start, but looked the least impressive of the three, in my opinion, too.
So, yeah, we'll see how that goes this week. And who knows, like I kind of joked about, Libator could be called up. Whitley could be called up. So these guys could be added to the pool come Sunday. Ricky Tiedemann got shut down. That's not good. Yep. He was like, I had Welsh on with Mason Miller for, I got like a 10-minute pod with Welsh. And he said out of all the pitchers this year, Tiedemann's the one he'd want the most whenever he came up. And like those are the handful of guys. Like there's a bunch of good prospect guys. I always feel bad saying there's a bunch of like certain guys. Like I just listen to because I have access to listening to them. And when he said Tiedemann as all of them, I kind of opened my eyes up. Like whoo, like really interesting. And then that happened. So that's no bueno. But there's a lot of dudes still coming. Like Gavin Williams might still come up with the Guardians. Like even James Anderson said he's the best out of the three. And he's just a little like he just got promoted from AA to AAA. Like there's more to come down the waiver wire line, but it's the argument or the discussion, not argument, that we've had and others. It's like, do you pay the premium now to get more starts, or do you save money later to get more quality? I guess it might not be more quality. You don't know because it's like one in the hands better than none at all type thing. So it's a tough situation.
I'm typically pretty conservative fab wise. This year I have been aggressive. I mean, I just talked about the bids that I won, but I have been pretty aggressive on these guys just because starting pitching's in the toilet and we should get a full year for a lot of these guys. But I don't know. It's I think I've said this before, but it's just like a different game this year. It's a different strategy in Fab. We have not had this in years prior where we're waiting for Super 2. And all these prospects come up in like May and June. This is difficult, and whoever picks correctly out of Taj Bradley, out of Tanner Bibee, out of Bryce Miller, out of Mason Miller, like it's gonna decide a lot of standings movement by the end of the year.
Hey, let's not forget the offensive side of things here. Matt Mervis is getting the call up. He'll be starting on Friday. You might not even listen to the show yet because they have a matinee in Wrigley. Like that's like I was thinking about today just because this is like just the baseball fan in me, like the romantic part about baseball that people talk about. what better way to debut than a Friday matinee in Wrigley Field? Like, that is freaking, like, for just from a baseball standpoint, it don't get much better than that. That's like tradition 101 right there. So, like, you're going to have the rowdy Wrigley people taking the day off from work, like, pump, like, it's going to, and then he gets to go to Wrigleyville after the game. God forbid he hits a home run or something. Like, they'll be buying him drinks and food all night long. Like, he'll be a legend by the end of, by midnight in Chicago if this takes place. It's everything you could hope for as a kid, but we saw him in the Arizona Fall League. He had a monster AFL. He was awesome in the home run derby. He's dropping bombs. And he's backed it up in AAA this year. Six homers, 27 runs, 27 RBIs, hitting 286. Throughout the minors, he's hit for good average and tons of power. Hit 34 homers in AA last year. Or no, 14 in homers in AA, 15 in AAA. But a 16% walk rate and 70% strikeout rate stand out in a very, very positive light for this big man. And the other thing I'll mention, he's got these batting averages that have been good. The last 2 years, at least in AAA, 294 BABIP. So it's not all BABIP supported. Like, he's hitting the crap out of the baseball. And a lot of guys are. Christopher Morel's another story, but he's kind of blocked right now. But Mervis is getting the call. Obviously, depending on how he does this weekend, it'll depend on how much he goes for. But I'm pretty sure he's going to go pretty high already just by name value alone. I've been trying to stash him the last few weeks. I know others have as well. I only got like one share, unfortunately. So what are you thinking about this Mr. Matt Mervis situation?
Finally. Like, yeah, like you were saying, like, he was the buzz at first pitch and at the AFL. You
remember those early drafts? People were drafting him like the top 15 rounds of drafts. It was nuts.
I should go back and see where Mervis was taken in those two fall league drafts, because they do the two draft and holds. And I usually help run a 12-team auction. I wouldn't be surprised if Mervis went in that. But, yeah, and then the Cubs, like, started signing guys. Bellinger and Hosmer, which I'll never understand.
And Muncie.
Yeah, I don't know. So it's he's finally here. Mervis is finally here. Like, you can't, and Bubba, you mentioned the plate discipline, like the walk rate, strikeout rate. That usually portends to, I mean, there's always an adjustment period. Typically, your guys that show those better plate skills in the minors transition a little bit easier than your free swingers. Not saying that Mervis is just going to hit the ground running. Who knows? But that's certainly a good sign. The only, like, kind of drawback that I'll say with Mervis is that I mentioned this as part of a draft strategy early in the season. There's no steals there. And so stolen bases are – the bar for stolen bases are higher than ever this year. And just be careful. I'm not saying it's, like, a reason to not go aggressively after Mervis. But if you don't have many steals, you don't have many steals potential – you're not getting any from Matt Mervis. So I don't know. That said, like, he's up here to stay. Mervis is going to play first base. He's going to DH. The skills look amazing. So I think he's worthy of a sizable bid. I do wonder, like, at first base, like, would you rather Rowdy?
Jose Abreu or Matt Mervis? Let's have some fun.
I would go. That's a really good one. I think I'd go Mervis.
Yep, yeah, the crazy part, that's a discussion point.
Jose Abreu
is horrific.
He hasn't hit a home run. I think he's hit one home run. He's one of three guys. I wrote this on the Speculator this week. He's one of three guys with 200 plus plate appearances dating back to last September and one home run or less.
He has zero home runs this year.
Yeah, no homers this year. The other two were Miles Straw and Luis Arraez. So yes, I'd take Mervis over Jose Abreu, which means I would drop Abreu. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking myself into that too much. I'd bench Abreu. I still think there's something there and go for Mervis. What would you take, like, Rowdy or Mountcastle? What about that kind of?
I'd keep Rowdy and Mountcastle. And this is probably one of my flaws, and I've tried to change it, obviously, with the pitchers I've been picking up lately. I'm trying to take AKA biases aside. And I used to always be like, hey, this guy's proven it to me. This guy hasn't in Mervis yet. Like, he's done it in AAA. How's the bigs look? So that's like a flaw of mine. I'm very, very well aware of. But, like, I'm looking at just the top 30 leaderboard at first base just for fun here. And it's the guy like Josh Naylor or Mervis, probably Mervis, right? Pretty easy.
I don't know if it's easy, but probably Mervis. Josh Definitely Bell. Over Josh Bell, who we talked about.
So say, yeah, Naylor and Bell. Let's do, what about Andrew Vaughn?
Mervis. Mm-hmm. Not really. Ty France. Mervis.
Obviously over Carlos
Drury, Santana. Brandon Drury. I think Drury.
Like, I'm just going down this list. Like, all of a sudden he's almost the top 10 to 12 first baseman if we're going through this list.
Yeah.
So that's just why I wanted to do, like, just put in perspective in your brain. Like, who do you have out there? Take even corner infield options, could be even a utility play for you. Like Ryan said, he's not going to steal bags, but he's going, he could hit 30 home runs the rest of the way if we have the legit bouncy ball this summer. Like, it's no exaggeration what he could do to a baseball. And he hits for a decent average, which is hard to find from power hitters, especially out of the minor leagues. Rest of season projections don't love him. He's only projected for, like, the Bad X has him for 6 homers. We know what the Bad X thinks about rookies. Steamers has him for 12 homers. I think he's good for at least 20. Honestly, in 5 months of baseball or so, four and a half months of baseball, I think he can get 20. Like, that's 5 a month for Mervis. Like, he can get streaky. Yeah, we'll see.
That sounds reasonable.
Especially, like, on those warm, windy Wrigley Field days. Like, he could run into something to hurt everybody.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
He's definitely the top batter we've seen in fact.
Oh, and that's what it's
been
all
pitchers. We need to even the thing out a little bit. We need some hitting prospects, man.
Yeah, it's been – the hitting side's been former prospects that have failed that have somehow learned how to hit all of a sudden. The Durans, the Senzels, the Lowe's. And then it's all these pitching prospects. We're finally getting a hitting prospect up, which is fun to see. And hopefully that might be a trend going forward here pretty soon. Last bit here, you were talking about relief pitchers as well, which is getting pretty fun because Clay Holmes, he got the vote of confidence and went out and didn't pitch well again. That's not good. But Michael King has pitched really good. He's got a second save of the year the other night. He's more of a multi-inning dude. That second save was an inning and two-thirds. He's very, very good. They still want Holmes to be the guy, but for how much longer is the question? You mentioned on this that he's rostered in 74% of mains and 15% of OCs. I grabbed them in at least one, if not two, of my three OCs this past week for like $3. So I think the biggest reason I did it is, yes, I think he can get some saves. But secondly, with as bad as starting pitching is, I'll take 2 to 3 outings a week from Michael King and take those stats and maybe sneak a win or a save out of it than some of these other starting pitchers we're using right now. So that's where I like Michael King. What about you?
That's the thing with King. He already has 17 innings pitch of a 1.56 ERA with estimators that aren't really that far off. King checks all the boxes and really has for quite some time. 51 innings last year, 2.29 ERA. He misses bats. He gets ground balls. And Clay Holmes looks awful. So, like, I think you nailed it, Bubba. Like, I could see Michael King being, I don't know about their full-time closer because of the value that he provides in a multi-inning role. But if you get a save a week with 3 to 4 innings of what he's been doing, what King's been doing, I think that's plenty valuable. So Michael King, I'll be bidding on. It's refreshing to be bidding on closers, I guess. Again, it's been a little while. Pete Fairbanks went on the IL this week, so like, and it sounds bad. So I think that's another one. I think Jason Adam has been fantastic. He picked up. Actually, he didn't pick up the most recent save. I think Chase Anderson picked up like a 3-inning save the other day for Tampa. But I think Jason Adam is the at least primary guy in Tampa. And skills look pretty sweet there, too. It's crazy what Tampa does with these guys. Jason Adam, his last year with Chicago with the Cubs in 2021 at a 5.91 ERA. Jason Adam last year with the Rays, 1.56 ERA, this year 1.59. So, and he's like 31. I don't know how Tampa Bay does this, but
it's crazy, but they continue to do it year in and year out. One day we'll not doubt them. I'm not saying we did, but I'm just like, the real quick, the Fairbanks thing, bizarre. He has the issue where he just can't grip his hands because it's cold, ball, cause it's cold. Now all of a sudden he's got like forearm stiffness. That's a weird transition, folks. All I'm going to say, not good at all. All right, let's talk about our weekly matchup game, our weekend matchup game, where the winner gets a free round of golf in Arizona next year. We came into the week with a 3-2 lead by yours truly. And like I expected, we basically tied again. So do you want to recap the week and see how it went?
Another push this week. So I took the hitter side, you took the pitcher side. Bubba, we finally picked like
good
hitters.
Yeah.
I was getting a little nervous there after, like, my man Dahlbeck didn't play, then got sent down the weekend I picked him. I went Max Kepler, who had a great week, a great weekend, hit a home run, a few walks, a couple hits. And your Geraldo Perdomo paid off pretty well, too. So he had 7 points, kept her at 9. So it was good.
Yeah, pitching side of things, Logan Allen got the job done again. Clark Schmidt, close. He gave up a lot of runs, but he helped you in the other departments. It was close.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take 8 points. So our points is innings plus Ks minus earned runs. I'll take that, Clark Schmidt. He didn't win, but, you know, wasn't a Logan Allen bending of the rules selection either. So it's not bad.
Oh, we got to tongue-in-cheek it, don't we? We got to do it. All right, so that takes us to this week. And it's a fun week. We have a Cincinnati series on tap. No Coors to play with, which is nice. But some suspect pitching is the best way I'll say it over the weekend. So if I'll give you the floor, Ryan. What matchups are you looking at this week?
Yeah, no Coors, but Colorado's throwing out some hittable pitching in Antonio Senzatella, Austin Gomber, and show favorite Ryan Feltner, who's actually been okay this year. Okay, I don't know standards. What he did in his last start. The skills were actually decent a little while ago, but it's a great matchup for the Mets. Great matchup for Atlanta. They get three Baltimore righties and Dean Kramer, Kyle Bradish, Tyler Wells. Tyler Wells has actually been decent, but that's not a matchup you run away from. And then another like favorable one that at least I saw was Cincinnati, of course, at home, but they get the bottom half of the White Sox terrible rotation with Lance Lynn, who I still think is going to turn things around, man. But maybe it starts this weekend. But it's Lance Lynn, Mike Clevenger, and Michael Kopech. So lock and load Cincinnati, especially the lefties. Small park. Your Friedel, your Fraley, your whatever other F lefties they have.
Half them all. Henry Ramos has been called up and been very productive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's I should have maybe used Henry Ramos this week, but I did not. I went a different direction. So you got those, some bad matchups, though. Baltimore gets Atlanta. That'll be interesting. Atlanta's got some big guns coming out there. On the flip side, it's funny, the second worst matchup is Chicago at Great American Small Park. Because you get Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, and then you get to relax against Luke Weaver. So that's a nice plus as well. So yeah, some fun ones this weekend. And that Colorado's got the flip side of the Mets. Given the Mets just got smoked by Detroit, and they had Scherzer and Verlander go. So
that was shocking. That was shocking to me.
Because the Rockies get Kota Senga, who's been off. Tyler McGill hasn't been great, and Lucchesi's been off. Like that's if it wasn't the Rockies, you might be excited about that series. So we'll see how that goes. Let's do it. You get the floor with the hitters. You picked first, hitting wise. Who you got?
In honor of your retired co-host, I'm going to go Eddie Eagle, Eddie Rosario. I was all over Eddie Rosario in Fab last week because this was an 8-game week for Atlanta, and I think they got 7 righties, and they will get those 3 more righties this weekend. Rosario already has a steal, a few RBI this week, a few hits, so it's already kind of paid off. I think Eddie Rosario is going to be – he was only like 17% rostered in 12 team leagues. And maybe that's a platoon thing, but I think this week he's fantastic. The barrel rate for Eddie Rosario, 11.5%. Like the power's kind of come back. He had the vision problems and that sort of thing that I hope is behind him. So it's almost, I don't even know if it's a streamer for me anymore. I think Eddie Rosario might be up to stay.
Yeah, if it's the right matchups for the right righties on the week, he can hit lefties. They just don't play him against lefties because they have other options. But yeah, I don't think it's a bad one. For me, with Corey Seager out, it's Ezekiel Duran season, folks. He's been crushing baseballs. Over the last 2 weeks, hitting .392 with 3 homers, 4 doubles, 2 stolen bases, 14 RBIs. He's doing a little bit of everything for the only hitless in 2 out of the games the last 2 weeks, which is pretty impressive to see as well. He is hitting towards the bottom of the order, which is obviously not ideal, but I digress. He gets a great situation as well. He gets 3 games in Anaheim against 3 lefties, Tyler Anderson, Reed Detmers, and Jose Suarez. We'll get to Suarez later. We'll get to Suarez later. Hey, I picked my hitter before you picked your pitchers. Don't get mad at me. But you get Duran versus 3 lefties. He's swinging a hot stick. The Rangers are swinging really, really hot bats. So I like Duran this week. It's going to be fun. Duran versus Rosario. could be another tight race here. So yeah, could be fun. Could be very fun.
He'll be decent. Durant will be decent for two games until he runs into the Jose Suarez revival, I will say.
Why would you say that? What's your interest in Jose Suarez?
He's my pick this week. I think he's 5% rostered in 12 teamers. I think I even cut him in 15 teamers. Yeah. And not really that hard of a decision. Like, Jose Suarez was legitimately one of the worst pitchers in baseball this year. So why am I picking him? He looked a lot better his last start out. And it's not just that. It's that on top of the second half version of Jose Suarez that we saw. We talked about Suarez in our draft season, kind of late starting pitchers that we like. So I can't just throw away what Jose Suarez did in the second half last season. I wonder, like, typically when a pitcher just totally goes off the rails like this, it's either like a hidden injury or he's dipping his pitches or just something mechanically is off. And Jose Suarez looked, like I said, much better in a semi tough spot at Milwaukee last week when five innings scoreless with six Ks. So I'm, this is a little bit of a stubborn, you know, I'm sticking with Suarez, but I think he'll sneakily look okay this weekend. And if he does, like, I'm picking him back up in 15 teamers.
Yeah, he's going to be much more on my radar again because I was hauling on him too. So I dropped him. It's only fitting if he goes and has a great two-step this week just to really shove it back at me. For me, I'm going to go with Brad Keller. Brad Keller, 20% rostered, no Cs, going up against the wonderful Oakland Athletics, the matchup we're looking for. It's been a weird year for Keller. He's had like three really, really good starts. He's had a couple hiccups recently at Arizona and Texas, which we found out they're actually pretty decent hitting teams. Strikeouts have been wavering, but when he's had his best stuff, it's 4 or 5. He's even had a 7 strikeout game. So I guess what I'm looking for is I need like the 5 innings out of him, maybe 6, limit the damage, get me 5. Give me hopefully a K of an inning. We'll see. It's the Oakland A's. This A's team's kind of weird right now. They've had their moments of actually being good offensively, and then they've also had their Oakland A's moments. So I'm going to take my chances on Brad Keller going up against Oakland, one of the matchups we want to target in baseball, and see where he can take it for me.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. On the pitching side, I'm feeling good.
Yeah, when I was scrolling through the pitching, I was not as in love with the hitting options, let's put it that way. It was.
We could have gone Bryce Miller. Neither of us did the
because I'm a man. I didn't want to do it twice in a row and hear about it again. So I kept it civil in that regard. Because at least, I tried to keep it, you know, normal. You know, if Brad Keller gets scratched on Sunday, I might text you. I was kidding. See what happens.
Bubble wrap the man. Come on.
He's got Houston. Bryce Miller's got Houston. So this could actually affect his fab money this week. We'll see. Or make it go through the roof. It's a
Houston,
fun one.
Though, like,
they're not, Houston they're that not,
tough? I mean, you've got Abreu, who's not really anything. Bregman's been struggling. That tough right now. Like, 50-50 chance Yordan plays. If Yordan doesn't play, that lineup's, I mean, it's not bad, but it's not Houston that we're used to.
I agree with you there. So we'll see how that goes out. But let's talk bloom boards, my friend. Another fun one here, going through some K percentage and barrel percentage gainers and fallers. So why don't you give us a little rundown of what you got in store here?
Yeah, just looking at the two main metrics that I look at to evaluate hitters. This is simple stuff. Do you put the ball in play? It's your strikeout rate. And when you do put the ball in play, do you hit the ball hard? And do you hit it in the air? And that would be barrel rate. So what I did with this board is I took the top 10 best and worst guys who have improved their strikeout and barrel rates or not improved their strikeout and barrel rates compared to last year. And so put that out on Twitter leading up to the show. And so you can check that out there. I wonder if I can share it. Kind of throwing a curveball.
I'm ready for
can
it.
I share it?
Yes, you can. Give it to me.
For the YouTube crowd, for the video crowd, look at that.
Boom. We're almost professional around here.
Almost. Yep. So, yes, for the podcast listeners, we actually have the board up on the screen so we could take a look at it. So in green, we've got the improvers. In red, we've got the guys who have fallen off. Compared to last year. And so, like, one caveat here before we kind of start picking at names and this sort of thing. So, like, and this kind of, I don't know, bugs me, whatever. Like, we talk about regression and we talk about like a hitter's true skill level and that sort of thing. So surface stats can fluctuate. As we all know, batting average can be fluky. Home runs can be fluky. Skills can fluctuate too. So like, I'll make Nolan Arenado as an example here. He's like our worst strikeout and barrel fader from last year. Like, does that mean Nolan Arenado is going to be bad all year? No. Like, give me the track record of Nolan Arenado. Unless he's hurt, unless there's some kind of hidden injury or something, you can just legitimately be in a slump and have a bad K rate and not hit many barrels for like a month. I mean, it happens. Even the best hitters, that happens. So that's the one caveat I want to throw out there, that like, even if you start talking about skills, K rate, barrel rate, that sort of stuff, just know that stuff can fluctuate too. And for a lot of these guys, trust the track record of years over 1 month.
And like we say time and time again, these bloom boards are to open your eyes to dig deeper. That's never the end all be all. So like I was playing with some Savant stuff with Curlin on the last episode, just looking at, you know, hard hit rate risers and fallers from 2022 to 2023. And it's like, whoa, certain names stand out, which then makes you go and dive in. Abreu's on the negative on that list too. Like, there's a lot of things that are not looking good for Jose Abreu. And we're going to talk about him on this one.
Is he on this list? Is he?
He's on this list too. Like, yeah, he's on every bad list right now, because it is pathetic what he's doing. Like, it's, well, I guess pathetic's rude. He's old and had a great career, but it's like he hit the cliff. And I don't know. We'll get to him in a minute. Let's look at the positive side of things. We'll start with Green. Green is good. We'll start there. And, you know, Matt Chapman's crushing everything right now. His K rate has dropped 4%, 27 to 23. The barrel rate's 8 to 20. He's always been a guy that's hit the ball really, really hard. That's never really been a problem with him. It's actually just more putting the ball in play consistently, which obviously helps with the Ks, as you mentioned. So he's doing that right now. He's kind of slowed down a little bit the last week. I didn't expect it to be nuclear like he was doing, but he's good. I don't think we need to say a whole lot about him unless you have extra on Matt Chapman.
The only thing I would add with Chapman is he's actually been like pretty unlucky from a power standpoint. Like, he should actually have a lot more than 5 home runs. Dude has 25 barrels. Ooh. And 5 home runs.
A 20% like, that's barrel rate, home run to barrel rate. That's not good.
Yeah, that's really low. Like, typically, and it's very much park dependent and that sort of thing, but typically it's like half of your barrels tend to go for home runs, give or take, you know, whatever. But like, using that general rule of thumb, Matt Chapman should have like 12 home runs and not 5. So if anything, he's been a little bit fortunate on the batting average side. Like, this is still, I mean, we have years of swing and miss here, but if anything, like, he should have a bit more home runs. So things look really good for him.
Nice, nice. Yeah, it'd be great because, you know, Chapman and Josh Young are crushing everything if you waited on third baseman. It's been beautiful with those two. Brian Reynolds is what I wanted to mention. K percentage 23 to 16, barrels from 5 to 12. It's impressive when you look at his stat line right now. Just you look at the quality of contact metrics besides just the barrels, the hard hit rates, all that. His hard hit rate's over 50% right now, the best of his career. But you just look at his stat line. This is what stood out to me. 327, 5 homers, 17 runs, 23 RBIs, 5 stolen bases. The walks and the K percentage as well. Very similar, slightly better than 2021 when he broke out. And everyone was in love with Brian Reynolds. He had a setback a little bit last year, but the overall stat line is pretty similar, but his quality of contact metrics are much, much improved. And then if you start digging into some other stuff, it's like, this is an impressive little streak here for Brian Reynolds. I don't know if it's a streak, actually. It might be more of a full-time thing. So what's your thoughts on Brian Reynolds?
Yeah, it's almost like, what's the outlier? Brian Reynolds, the last 3 years, batting average-wise, 302, 262, 327. 262 kind of looks like an outlier. And so I don't know if Brian Reynolds was a 300 hitter, but he's not far. And the power, he's doing this while holding the power. We know that he's a pretty legit 25 to 30 home run guy. The underrated part with Brian Reynolds, 5 for 5 stolen bases. Like, he's one of those guys who I think benefits the most from this new stolen base environment. The guy who's not a total burner, but runs just enough to be dangerous. Brian Reynolds had 5 steals in 2021, 7 steals in 2022. Mm-hmm. Already has 5, and again, perfect 5 for 5. So, like, even though the lineup, I shouldn't say that. That's my Pittsburgh bias coming in. The lineup's pretty legit.
I'm talking about Captain Jack games. Like that.
Yeah, that's right. Do not uh, Do not besmirch the name of Captain Jack Suwinski or Rodolfo Castro or Connor Joe. So it's all looking good for Brian Reynolds. I think, if anything, the homer rate is very much sustainable. And does he end up like 280, 300 with 10 steals? Like, that's a hell of a season. So,
yeah,
I like that.
It's impressive. It's very impressive. But I want to stay in Pittsburgh because this one is with Ke'Bryan Hayes. 22% K rate last year, down to 13. Like, that's a massive improvement. Barrel rate's gone from 3 to 5, though not much. We've always talked about how much he barrels the baseball. But in the past, like, it felt like the hard hit rate's always been the same. You know, 45, 46. It's 46 again this year. So the hard hit rate's there. It's just the elevation. And that stood out to me. His launch angle is massive this year. His fly ball rate's gone up 7%. His, like, line drive rate and ground ball have kind of switched over to the fly ball rate, which you would think almost would be more barrels unless he's getting under it too much, is the way I'm looking at it. Hitting 222 is the bummer here because everything else looks pretty nice. Only one home run. Like, certain parts of it looks really good. There's other parts where you're just like, what are we missing here? So when you look at Ke'Bryan Hayes, no power really, and the batting average is weak, but it seems like there's maybe something below the hood that looks promising.
I'm not. So he's one of the ones on the green side where I'm not as enthused with Ke'Bryan Hayes. Like, yes, the barrel rate has improved, but it went from 3% to 5%. Like, technically, that, yes, that is an improvement. But like you were saying, Bubba, there's not much power here. And so when you don't have much power, you can put the ball in play more, but it's just not doing that much for him. So, like, yes, there's been some bad luck with Ke'Bryan Hayes. He's not a 222 hitter with this type of K rate. At HQ, we have an expected batting average of like 270. So yeah, there's some room for that to grow. The really interesting thing with Ke'Bryan Hayes, and I'm sure this is just kind of small sample flukiness, you drafted him for steals. Ke'Bryan Hayes had 20 bags last year. He's 3 for 6 so far this year. Like, he's running as much as like Brian Reynolds. And I don't look too much into the 3 for 6 part, but like, you'd like to see him start picking up the stolen base production a little bit. So, I don't know. This is one where, like, you do, once I took a deeper look past this board, for all those reasons, like, I don't know. I'm not trying to bag the guy, but there's still plenty of room. Like, he's just 26. There's some room for power. Like, last year and this year, he has hit a ball 113 miles an hour. Like, that's pretty good, but he hasn't been able to do it consistently even this year.
Yeah, that's why, like I said, you look at this stuff and it's like, what is going wrong here? But you nailed a lot of it there. And it's been a problem with him kind of throughout his career. He just hasn't been able to put all the pieces together at the same time. That's been a bugaboo for him.
Quick trivia question for you, Bubba.
Okay.
Who leads Major League Baseball in barrels?
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports, and support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
That's a good question. And barrels. Is it Ronald Acuna?
No, it's Matt Chapman. We were just talking about him.
I should have known that. Stupid.
25 barrels for Matt Chapman. How much does second place have?
Let's say 17.
18. 18. Yeah. Matt Chapman is miles ahead of, who is it, Randy Rosarena, your boy, and Ryan nice. Mountcastle nice. With 18. So he's got seven more barrels than anyone else in baseball. Acuna, a good guess, 16 barrels this year. So I was looking that up. That's pretty wild to be that
far. It seems like every time I turn around, Acuna is just launching a ball somewhere.
Yeah.
He's already stealing the base, one of the two. I had to pull Chapman.
He's on the list.
Oh, yeah, he is on the list. I don't think we need to talk about him. No, not really about him. So I wasn't too worried about it. But, man, you look at Chapman's page, and what I wanted to bring up is he's always hit the ball well. He's been like 47 to 52% hard hit rates, barrel rates, always double digits. It just never like fully would click with him, which is always frustrating. So I'm hoping this is a full season thing with him. That's what I'm really hoping for.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about Ketel Marte. This is a guy every draft season, Ryan, since he had his massive bouncy ball year of 2019, hitting 32 home runs. It's like, can he stay healthy? Is he for real? Is he just going to be a speed guy? There's always a what if. But right now he's got five homers, a stolen base, hitting 267, and he's on the green side of things here with a 18% K rate last year to 15% barrel rate, goes from 4 to 9. What are we thinking here? Because like he's on pace for, let's say, close to 20 home runs and like, you know, seven steals or something with a decent average, or is this kind of like a fluky thing?
He's Ketel Marte for me is like always one of the hardest guys to pin down because he did have the breakout season in 2019. And that's always my thing. It's like guys who break out in 2019, happy fun ball year. Like I take that with a grain of salt, but Ketel Marte has like been hurt every other year since then. I guess he was pretty healthy in 2022, just a COVID stint, but he was healthy in 2022 and hit 240 with 12 homers. Like that wasn't very impressive at all. So I lean towards being more pessimistic on Ketel Marte, despite the improvements that we're seeing early this year with a little bit more power, just because like, I would like Ketel Marte a lot more if he ran, but he's got one steal. He had five all of last year. He had two in 2021. So he's got eight steals over the last three seasons combined. Like, I don't know. And then you factor on the list of health ailments, like the hamstring strains from 2021. I don't know if that totally is. He's out of the woods there. So, like, I almost just feel that injury's coming. Wouldn't wish it upon him, but I don't know. Maybe it's my bias against Ketel Marte, but I've always been lower on him. And this list, for me, doesn't change that too much.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm still like, yeah, you need to prove it to me a little longer, buddy. It hasn't quite been there with him. And like you said, he's not running at all. Things aren't jumping off the board like you'd hope they would with like a Matt Chapman and others. So it's kind of tough to get full all in on that one. All right. The last one I am going to bring up, unless you want to talk about others, is Jorge Soler. This is fun just for the fact, you know, 29% carry to 26, 7 to 10 on the barrel rate. He was a guy that in recent years, you know, before when he's in Kansas City, before he got traded to Atlanta, you're like looking at his X stats and all these barrel numbers, like he's going to break out. He broke out in a big, big way, monstrous way. Then, you know, he goes to Miami, nothing too crazy. This year, it feels like the same thing. He had a sixth home run of the season on Thursday, which was great to see. It's like he's teetering on, okay, he's going to break out. There's other, like the other half of the room is like, no, this is who he is. He's going to, you know, stink. But it's only a 25% K rate. It's not like crazy, crazy numbers like we've seen with other people. So it's just, he's streaky. And I feel like a streak's coming. I just don't know if I can trust rostering the streak. So what's your thoughts on Jorge Soler?
I don't know. I mean, kind of the lazy is just like low batting average. You're going to get power. Because that's basically what he is. And so, I don't know. This is a guy who hit 40 home runs in 2019, but I don't know. Back-to-back batting averages of 200, like, it's just a killer. Like, you need him to hit 40 home runs to be, like, all that useful. And then you tack on the Miami lineup, which isn't that great. So, like, how many guys are on when he's hitting? And I don't know. I'm not as enthused. One thing this just got mentioned, actually, when it was in the chat or on Twitter. These barrel rates that we're citing, this is barrels per plate appearance. So they're a little bit lower than what you typically see on like a Fangraphs, which says barrel rate is per batted ball event. I don't know. I prefer per plate appearance. It just factors in the strikeouts. But that is one. We just got a comment that these look a little bit low, but that's why it's per plate appearance.
That makes sense because I had no idea. I was looking through. I'm like, Chapman's almost got a 30% barrel rate. What's going on here?
Yeah.
But yeah, that makes a lot more sense. Total makes sense. If you're good, I'm ready to go to the negative side of things.
Let's get negative. Actually, real quick, Paul Goldschmidt has somehow gotten better from last year, which is you don't really see it in the surface stats. He's got four home runs and a 296 batting average, which is fine. But like the four home runs on 13 barrels, Paul Goldschmidt, if you're in a trading league, I would be very interested in Mr. Goldschmidt. Now we can trade him for Jose Abreu.
Go for it. Yeah. We don't need to speak about Jose Abreu. I think we're both pretty much done with him, but he's on the list. If you're curious, he's a not good, folks. Let's talk about Goldschmidt's teammate, Nolan Arenado, who has dropped. His carry's gone from 12% in 2022, 23% or 22% in 2023, barrel per plate appearance from 7% to 2%. Playing DFS, even when the Cardinals have good matchups now, I have a problem recommending Arenado at his high price point every week just because it's been so atrociously bad. He has two home runs on the season, hitting 236, which is obviously less than ideal. He just looks, I don't know if lost is the right word at the plate, but it's not good with Arenado. So you have to like go deeper into like his swing rates and his contact skills and everything. And it's not crazy. He's swinging on his own more, but he's just swinging more in general is the way I look at it. So what's your thoughts on Arenado? Because this is a guy that I don't know if we saw this kind of drop off coming anytime soon.
No. 34 barrels in 21, 40 barrels in 22. Dude got three barrels so far this year. Just zero hard contact. I think he's probably pressing. I mean, I think that's why on the K rate, that's why it's basically doubled from 12 to 22%. I briefly mentioned the hidden injury column that I wrote for HQ in the Speculator this week. Nolan Arenado was on the cover of that sucker, and this is why. I just can't. Like, I tried to look and see, like, was he removed from a game in April or something? Like, did something happen? He did get hit in the hand in the World Baseball Classic. That could be something, could be nothing. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, Nolan Arenado has been so good for so long. I would not be surprised if at some point we hear, yeah, you know, my hand was messed up or something that we don't know. He's just like, I did a rolling graph on Fangraphs of his isolated power. Nolan Arenado's ISO hasn't been this low in 5 years, and that's just as far back as I look. So it's probably been even farther. This is a pretty wild drop off. I did get some comments on that article. It's like, should I trade him? Should I sell low? I would say no. Like, yeah, I just trust that you take the track record and I mean, yeah, if you can get like 90 cents on the dollar, sure. But I would not be too desperate at this point.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I would not be giving up on Arenado Abreu. Like, I'm going to keep going to him. Yes, you can move on in my mind. But Arenado, no. Like, unless someone's offering you like an elite third baseman, I wouldn't even trade Josh Jung for Nolan Arenado. Like, I think there's still a lot there with Arenado. It's close. It's close. It's interesting, but like, would you go Matt Chapman for Arenado?
Oh, that's tough. I'll hold. I'll say no. That's tough, though. That's a perfect like track record versus what we've seen so far.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, I'm a track record guy, so it'd be very tough for me to get off. That's why I don't like trade leagues to begin with, because I just know I'm stubborn. I'm freaking stubborn to the T, and it'd be tough to move on in that direction. But yeah, something to think about with your Arenado shares. Let's stay at the hot corner real quick over here. Manny Machado, his K rate's gone from 21 to 23%. Barrel per plate appearance in 7 to 5%. Looking at his plate discipline real quick, he's swinging a lot less in the zone. And I've noticed that with a few players like Gunnar Henderson and some other guys, like they're just being almost too patient at the plate, which is not good. At the same time, I say that, and you look at Machado, he's swinging more outside the zone too. So it's not like he's being more patient. It's like a weird crossover on what's going on with Manny Machado. But four homers, two stolen bases, a bad batting average. Similar to Arenado, I'm like, let's hold. Let's see where it goes. He's in an elite lineup. The whole team struggled. Soto is waking up. Tatis is back. You figure it's going to come to Machado. I don't know. But what are you seeing with Manny Machado, who is definitely off to a rough start this season?
I think that's all we're seeing. I think it's just a rough start. Manny Machado has more than earned the benefit of the doubt. And that's why it's so weird to see him and Arenado on here. But Manny Machado, like 30 home runs, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years of the last 8. And one of those is 28. So, like, I don't know. He's solid as you could be. And like you said, maybe there's this. Well, this is like pure narrative. But with Tatis back, like, I think San Soto's been slumping. I think San Diego hits their stride here pretty soon, and Machado will be just fine.
100% on board with you there. Let's talk about one of the draft season darlings and Anthony Santander. 19% K rate last year, up to 27 this year. That's called more like usual, actually worse than usual. But he's I think that's more than I'd expect. I'd expect more mid-20s than 19. That's just me. Could be wrong. But the other part is 8% per plate appearance to 4%. And that stands out a lot because it's a dude that relies on his power. And even if you just look at barrel percentage in general, 11.6 to 7, like that's a massive drop off for Anthony Santander. This is the guy that has the pulled power source, if you want to look at it. That was the discussions all offseason, swinging a ton right now outside the zone. So what's your thoughts on Santander, who I believe, let me scroll up, did go deep on.
Did hit homer today.
Yep, hit his homer today, his third of the year, but still hitting .241 on the season.
Yeah, and Santander is so dependent on the homers. He has a 51% fly ball rate, and I mentioned this a couple of times, and this is 50% last year too. He hits so many fly balls that it's a double-edged sword, man. Like, if you want to hit fly ball, if you want to hit that many fly balls, go for it. But you better have the power to back it up. Otherwise, you're going to end up hitting .230. I think Santander's probably even lucky to hit .230, to be honest with you. His expected batting average at HQ is .208. So you could actually argue Santander with all those fly balls.
He's overachieving.
The K's, he's actually overachieving batting average-wise. The home run today, I want to see how far it went. It was according to the MLB home run account, 406 feet. So not bad. He's earned a pass in terms of the power. I think the power is fine. I do worry about the ballpark, though. I mean, that's part of the context when you just look at these boards in a vacuum. Yes, he had the ballpark last year, but all those fly balls in a tougher park, if those Ks don't go back to where they were last year, with Santander, I think he's in some real trouble from a batting average standpoint, to where, like, I think we were just talking about Jorge Soler. Like, that's an interesting comp to me. And that's not good given where Santander was being drafted.
Yeah, that's not good at all. There is Santander's home run today had an exit velo of 101.3 let's just do this, make it a lot freaking easier. There we go. Exit velo of 101.3 or 101.1, 28-degree launch angle, 406 feet. XBA was only 630 on that. Tells you a lot about where that ball went out of the ballpark. Wasn't even a guarantee. What a homer in 30 out of 30 ballparks, though, which is good to see. But it wasn't a rocket, like a moonshot like he usually hits. So, I don't know. That's why I was nervous with them all preseason, when it was just like, hey, he's so dependent on if he doesn't hit home runs. It's the opposite of a rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's like a Hulk, like the Incredible Hulk or whatever you want to call him. I don't know. I have a lot of nicknames I don't want to use on the show right now that I would say that he could be. But he's very, very dependent. Let's put it that way. I'll give you a couple quick hitters here, because the rest of the names on this board outside of Trey Mancini and Jose Abreu are like big time dudes that we're obviously not getting rid of. Jordan Alvarez, I contribute to his injury. I don't know about you.
I do. I actually think he's probably the most interesting one to talk about, because it is the injury. Like, and so this could go two ways. It's
never gets better.
Right. It never gets better. And this is who Jordan Alvarez is this year, which is like what's he hitting? Like 260? Yeah. 264. He's got 6 home runs. Like, that's not terrible, but zero stolen bases.
Most of those were early in the season before his latest injury, too.
So it's like, yes, these could just be little injuries in the early part of the season that just go away, and Jordan's just a monster in the second half again. But it's May, man. Like, it's not super early anymore, and this stuff is lingering. He's missing games every now and then, and the power just is not, I don't want to say not there, but it's nowhere near Yordan level. So, like, of anyone on this list, like, Austin Riley shows up, Trey Turner, JTR, like, Mookie Betts even, I'm not really that worried. I mean, so I could probably say the same thing about those guys, as I said, for Arenado and Manny Machado. But Yordan Alvarez, for me, is the one who's like, ugh. I mean, you can't really do anything about it, but you just kind of hope that, yes, it's injury, and also that they're minor enough that they'll go away in the second half, and he returns to being one of the best hitters in baseball, if not the best.
Yeah, like, part of me is just like, hey, put him on the IL for like a month. Like, I'm good with it. Like, give me 3.5 like awesome months. I don't care. It's like,
we were saying that with Judge last week when, like, hip is like, just IL him, take the, I don't know about a month, get like a week, get him healthy.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, stop trying to play through it. Let him get healthy. Bring him back. Let's not mess around anymore. Austin Riley's one. He's hitting .248, 8 homers. Not worried about him, are you?
Nope.
Okay. That's why I figured, I just wanted to like quick hit these for people. They could figure out, but Trey Turner, he's an interesting one, I'll be honest, just because the production has been where it's at. But he's still hitting .259, 3 homers, 4 steals. The K rate's up a lot, and that compared to his norms, almost 25%, which is a bit surprising to me. I don't know. I still think there's a lot to like here. His hard hit rate's down a ton, his barrel rate's down a ton. Like, maybe I have to dig in more on Trey Turner. Maybe I just give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm still not worried. Obviously, I'm playing him every day, but that did, now that I just kind of glanced at his page, that stood out a little more than I thought it was going to.
And he's not running.
Yeah. Like that. That's like the quick glance through that. I'm like, this might be one I have to look at a little more a little later.
That is like an across the board. Again, I'm not worried, but it is like the trifecta of more strikeouts, weaker contact. And for someone who has averaged 30 steals the last two seasons, he's only attempted 4 stolen bases. That's interesting.
Yeah, that stands out. Like, JTR is on the list. You always wait for the catcher's years to catch up to them. I'm not saying they are with JTR. I'm still not worried about him. He's had a couple good games out there. Any concern on JTR?
Nope.
And then last but not least, Mookie Betts. I shouldn't say not, because he's always got that lingering. He's not running at all. And I know you mentioned that on a previous show, but I wasn't drafting him to run. He hasn't been a big runner compared to his early years. So what about you?
When we did the fade episode, I mean, he was your first round fade.
Yep.
Mookie Betts. I don't know. Yeah, not running. 2 stolen base attempts, 1 steal. That's not great. Everything else, I'm not worried about at all. Did just have a kid. Who knows how that is going and that sort of thing. But I'm more worried about, and again, you kind of called this, Bubba, but pretty worried about the lack of stolen bases. Pretty enthused about second base and shortstop eligibility in most.
That's
leagues,
a big plus. None of us saw that coming.
But yeah, we could use some more some Mookie stolen base attempts.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. If you guys have any other further questions on the Bloom board, feel free to hit up Ryan or the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod or whatever. I'll give you my 2 cents if you really want them. But he's the brains behind the operation. It's just fun to see these different things, and definitely opened up some mind. Roger Bloomfield has a question in the chat, by the way. He says, are you starting Lynn tomorrow, or are you streaming Reds hitters?
Whoa.
That seems like a personal dig at you. That's a personal dig at you, it feels like.
Man. We're rolling with Lance Lynn. That's a
great American, that's a no doubt. Park. What could go wrong?
Bring it on. I had a running... This happened twice last week, but on Saturday we went to the Oregon spring game.
Oh yeah.
Came back home. Lance Lynn had a no hitter through 6 innings.
The tweets now, yeah.
So I'm like, all right, he's back. He had like, I think 9 Ks, something like that. So we get home and I turn the game on, and I found the tweet. Since I turned the game on, home run, strikeout, single, double, walk, removed from game. So just fantastic.
Who was the
feel
other
like I have some control over later. That happening?
But... You had Mason Miller, I think, in the no-no, or was it somebody else?
I had, earlier that week, 2 days before, three perfect inning. Otani was perfect through
That's
three.
What it was. Yeah.
I turned it on against Oakland. I turned it on, hit by pitch, walk, home run, hit by pitch, home run, and a double, and two wild pitches in there too. So,
and folks, that's Otani's line, not Brad Miller or Brad Keller's on Sunday. Just remember that, or Friday, whenever Brad Keller pitches this week.
Brad Keller might yearn for that line, man. Hey, yeah. At least Otani made it to the fourth inning.
That sounds like Jose Suarez's line to me. okay, another couple more listener questions here. Chad Young asks, who is the only player on the green side that you're not buying the improvement? And I took it on the board. I'll throw it up again real quick. The green side of the board, you got Chapman, Reynolds, Acuna, Hayes, Marte, Blackman, Mountcastle, Goldie, Soler, Vladito. So you mentioned you're not on the Hayes. So
yeah, we talked about Hayes. I'm not really on the Charlie Blackman revival.
No.
He is not striking out. He's hitting for a little more power, but I mean, we're just kind of seeing like the slow end of his career. So Ke'Bryan Hayes, Marte, and Blackman for me. What about you? Yeah.
It'd be kind of Hayes because I do agree with what you said. I wish cast that it had finally come to fruition, but I think Blackman would be the easy one for me. Blackman just, no, not happening, not up in here. All right, let's go to the next question here. We have the War Dog. I'm going to be torn on each hitting period on who to bench to get Harper in the lineup. Can't bench Jose Ramirez, so it will be Arenado, Mountcastle, or Rizzo. Balance between history of player and current results for this weekend because of matchups, I'm benching Mountcastle. So I guess long-term he's wondering who to bench for Harper. I don't know, because he saw Arenado and Mountcastle on the list. They're on the green the green side.
I honestly like. By the way, Harper looks really good.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's
out not to rusty.
He's on a mission. He's on a mission, folks.
What an incredible by the way, he looks really good. I'd bench Arenado.
That's what I was gonna say. Until he heats up, and
until
then
you see something
all over again.
He's definitely would not even think of cutting Nolan Arenado for months, but I would bench him right now for Bryce Harper. And Mountcastle, at least right now, again, is tied for second in barrels in all of baseball. It's a tough decision, the Mountcastle Arenado one, but I think I'd bench Arenado right now.
Yeah, I'd recommend checking out the Baseball HQ weekly matchup ratings for offense and just rotating them through and seeing who hits what and go from there. Maybe when Mountcastle's at home, like he is this weekend, don't play him because that ballpark just destroys him. Jack Kitchen has a question. That red team, the right side of the blue board, is the 2022 All-Star team. It is pretty close. There's a lot. That's why I said, are you worried? Like, no. Because these are a lot of like top three round picks. It's like studs.
It's easy to fall back from really good numbers the previous year. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying at the top is these numbers, even though they are quote unquote skills, they will fluctuate throughout the season. So,
yep, for sure. Lil Book of Calm's got a good, he always has the deep dive questions.
This was good.
It's a good one. So his overall question is about the relationship between K percentage and swinging strike percentage. Part one, a little housekeeping because K percentage is calculated per plate appearance. And swinging strike percentage is calculated per pitch. Can you confirm that swinging strike percentage should stabilize significantly faster than K percentage?
I have not done the research myself, so I cannot 100% confirm, but I would be shocked if that was not the case. Anytime you have a denominator of a pitch over an at-bat or plate appearance, that's going to stabilize much quicker.
All right. I agree with you, too. Part two, Acuna's K percentage dropped from 24% to 15%, while his swinging strike improved only from 11% to 9%. If I understand the relationship correctly, 9% swinging strike should predict roughly 20% strikeout rate, not his actual 15%. When you do choose to use swinging strike versus K percentage, are there any issues around relying on swinging strike percentage exclusively?
The part two and part one was a good question too, but part two is really good because we talk about, I say we, us, the industry as a whole, we talk about whiffs and swinging strikes all the time with pitchers. And as a good indicator for strikeouts, it's like, oh, this guy's not getting strikeouts, but he's missing bats. Why don't we flip that on its head and say that same thing for Ronald Acuna, where, like, for example, he's still swinging and missing a ton. So I don't believe the K rate. I did, in preparation for this question, a little book of calm. If you are a Baseball HQ subscriber, I can send you the link. Steven Nickrand did some research on this, I think in January. There's a very tight correlation between swinging strikes and K rate for hitters, which is not that surprising. So I think it's a very good way to, for a lot of these guys, if you see a massive change, or it's someone, it's a Matt Mervis, we want to see what he did his first week, where there's not that much of a sample, there's not that many plate appearances. Yeah, use swinging strike rate to see how often that hitter is missing when he swings. Kind of goes without saying. So the only thing with swinging strike rate that I'll say for hitters, since it is like a pitch metric, it can kind of get skewed if, so like the Gunnar Henderson example, who just doesn't swing that much, he's going to have a low swing strike rate just because he doesn't swing that much. He's so passive. But still, it's a very high correlation. It's a good way to check out big changes in K rate. And it's brings up a good point. I don't know why we don't hear about swinging strike rate for hitters like nearly as much as on the pitching side.
Yeah, A, great answer. But B, this is why I love Little Book of Calm, because it comes with these kind of questions. That was a very interesting thing that I'd never really thought about, to be honest, when I look at things, but it makes a billion percent sense. Like, I look at like approach of the plate, like, are they swinging out of the zone more? Are they being more patient? Like, Gunnar Henderson is not swinging much at all compared to what he should be. But we don't really look at, I guess, the total picture of how, you know, A meets B meets C type scenario. So that's a very, very interesting way to break it down, because you guys are both right. We talk about swinging strike percentage with pitching all the time. So mm-hmm. why would we not do it with a hitter who has an even bigger sample size potentially? I don't know, but kind of. You could think of a bigger sample size. So, yeah, very, very interesting stuff.
One last, and then we'll wrap it up. But, like, since I always randomly bring up Matt Chapman facts on this episode.
Yep. Keep them going.
Here's Matt Chapman's swinging strike rate the last 4 years. 15%. 13%, 11%, this year down to 8%. He's not missing. He's hitting the ball damn hard, and he's not striking out. So that's just one more feather in the cap for Mr. Chapman.
So I'll ask you again, would you trade Arenado for Matt Chapman? I'm scared.
Damn it, Bubba. No, but if you ask me one more time, I might.
I'm going to get you. I'm going to wear you down. I'm going to, like, I'm Ian Conn.
Pass me one of those high noons. And
yeah, I'm going to teach you like Ian Conn. One. Taylor Johnson asks, this is going off of last week's episode, if there's time. I was really into Tyler Anderson with his ADP, but I'm having a tough time hanging on to him in my 14-team league. Do you think a turnaround is coming? He had a decent last start, or would you dump him and play the wire? It's tough in a 14 because that's deeper, obviously. In a 12, I'd play the wire personally. I'm not seeing the same guy we saw last year. But and in the 14, it's very close for me personally, but I've also had a much itchier trigger finger when it comes to ad drops so far this season. How would you approach this Tyler Anderson? Because he's another guy I know. I wouldn't say you were high on him, but you made the great argument during draft prep of, like, the dude was this last season. How was his ADP this? Like, it makes zero sense at all, but he's starting to live up to that ADP right now. That's the conundrum we're at. So how would you answer this question for our buddy?
Did look better in the last start, which, again, just one start. His next two starts, Anderson's, are at Cleveland, at Baltimore. So I kind of like that. The whiffs are still there. He's throwing strikes. I'm worried, but I'm not to the point in a 14-team league. I'm benching. I'm not cutting. I think I actually have Anderson active in labor, which is a 15-teamer. I'm not worried yet. The underlying numbers don't look too bad. The fastball is down a mile an hour. He's throwing 89.6. Like, that is a little bit of a cause for concern. But I mean, the other thing you have to ask yourself is, like, what are the alternatives? Even in a 14-team league, like, the starting pitcher waiver wire is just crap. So
that's the problem.
Tyler Anderson, he's above crap.
Yeah, he's floating. Let's put it that way.
He's a floater.
He's a floater. He's like the Milky Way bar in Caddyshack right now. So just be careful. Keep careful on that one.
Everyone runs away. There's a baby Ruth.
Baby Ruth. He's one step away from clogging the drain. last question I have here, and this was one that wasn't directed at us. It was a question about one of my tweets, but I thought it'd be good for the show. So you'll be fine without prep. Trust me. Jamie Goldberg asks, I tweeted about like Gossman is even not like he's going to get beat up too. And his answer is no one is immune. So he's got a quick question. Would you drop Taiwan Walker or Garrett Whitlock, who's actually rehabbing right now, for Michael King? I have a solid staff with Hader and Bard as closers. Walker and Whitlock are my two weakest links. Thanks. I would be willing to take King for Whitlock for sure. He's rehabbing right now. Should actually be back sooner than expected, but it took a second opinion. The first opinion almost thought TJ. Second opinion thought, let's get back to a throw-in program. So I'd be down to drop Whitlock. And we don't know the scenarios of how deep his league is or any of that, so that's kind of tough, but I'd say drop Whitlock.
I'd take King over. Definitely Whitlock. I'd take him over Taiwan Walker too. I mean, the damage Taiwan Walker... The question was Taiwan Walker, right? Or did I just...
Yeah, Taiwan Walker or...
That is. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the damage has like been done. 28 innings, 691 ERA, 160 WHIP. Like that is just so brutal. Go with Michael King. Like Taiwan Walker, I think he might be pitching hurt. He can't throw strikes. He's walking 13%. The batters he faces, it's just nothing looks good underneath the hood for Walker. So I'd lock in those ratios with King. If you get a couple saves, maybe a rogue win or two over the next couple weeks, all the better.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like even you mentioned Walker too. He's been rough, but out of the two, Whitlock, I'd find a way to get away from Walker as well. He's been a guy I've been targeting in DFS quite a bit because there's a lot to like to target there. But we'll wrap it up there, my friend. Another fun episode in the books. It just feels like each week we're going to tie in the game, and it's going to come down to the last time, and somehow you'll beat me 2-0. It'll be just ridiculous, but we'll see how that goes. Any final thoughts as we are going to be wrapping up our first week of May here pretty soon?
No, good show tonight. The great, great listener questions as usual. So keep them coming. And yeah, the Jose Suarez rebound train, it's left the station.
You know, the worst part is that I want it to be there because I've either dropped him everywhere or he's just a bench because I don't know why I haven't dropped him yet. I really don't. But man, I still think there's something there. And he gave us a glimpse of it this last time out. If he does it again, I'm going to get sucked right back in. And then it's going to be rough. So we'll see what happens. I kind of hope it takes one more start so he doesn't do it against me in a contest we're doing. But we'll see how that goes. But for everybody else, you can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Entrick, and this was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 55. Catch you all next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.